questions are being raised about the relationship between the alcohol industry and research at the National Institutes of Health. In 2013, the NIH, the federal agency that annually invests $30 billion of taxpayer money into medical research, began pitching a new $100 million study using private money to examine possible health benefits associated with moderate alcohol consumption, something some researchers suspected but hadn't proven. Now, no one disagrees the results could be important, and outside funding is common. The NIH has independent fundraisers. But what is controversial is that the NIH researchers themselves were pitching the study to alcohol industry representatives, and as part of their pitch, told them the outcome of the research might be good for their industry. This is all revealed in a New York Times investigation by Ronnie Karen Rabin, who writes that among those paying for the research are Anheuser-Busch, Heineken, Pernod Ricard, and Carlsberg. Ronnie Rabin is at NPR's New York studios. And Ronnie, we remember when there was talk about the health benefits of wine. How did you get interested in this?
I've been writing about this hypothesis for a while because it's very interesting, the idea that moderate drinkers might be healthier than people who don't drink at all. I found out this summer that that this was going to be put to a test, one of NIH's big government blockbuster trials, where, you know, 10-year-long trial that'll follow thousands of participants, randomize half of them to drink a little bit every day, half not, see what happens over time. But the twist with this study was that the NIH isn't paying for most of it. The industry is picking up most of the tab for this study and is donating money through a foundation called the Foundation for the NIH, which is a non-governmental entity because the NIH is not allowed to take donations or solicit donations from the private sector.
Well, let's underscore that because this alcohol study is actually overseen by the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism, which is one of 27 centers under the NIH, you remind us. And there is a way for there to be a public-private partnership between NIH research and funding, but there are strict rules about it. Remind us what's supposed to happen.
The rule in this case was supposed to be absolutely no communication between the industry and the scientist involved. There was supposed to be a complete firewall.
If money was raised, it would go through this foundation and that would complete the firewall.
The foundation raised the money.
Right.
And when I wrote the first story about 6 months ago, the lead investigator, Dr. Ken Mukamal, told me this was nothing but a good old-fashioned NIH trial. He said he wasn't even really sure that it was funded by the alcohol industry. And he said, we have had literally no contact with anyone in the alcohol industry in the planning of this.
But then you find what?
I started hearing that there had been contact. And not only that, that the scientists and NIH officials from the Alcohol Institute had gone on the road. The Beer Institute was hosting the Worldwide Brewers Alliance. They went down to Florida to the Distilled Spirits Council. They went repeatedly to the Distilled Spirits Council in Washington, D.C. That's the trade association for liquor companies. And they pitched. The scientists made a case for why this was important because we really don't know if this is a cause and effect. They explained the evidence and how this could enlighten us on this point. They made PowerPoint presentations, and then the NIH officials would get up and say, we can't do this without your funding. You have to contribute money to the foundation because we can't take it directly from you, but we can only do the study if you pitch in.
Well, how did this happen? Because it's very clear that the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism, again, under the umbrella of the NIH, is instructed that the fundraising has to go through the Foundation for the NIH, which is the non-governmental entity, and that no researchers are allowed to directly pitch for funding. So how is it that these researchers did this?
The initiative came from a senior advisor to the former acting director of the NIAAA named Lorraine Gunzerath, who thought this would be a great way to raise funding for this very interesting trial. She convinced Dr. Mukamal to come and make these presentations, and he came with another Yale researcher named Dr. John Crystal, and they would do this PowerPoint presentation, which I also got a hold of a copy of that, and they were very convincing, so much so that the Distilled Spirits Council people wrote in an email to someone at NIH, we want the guys from Yale and the guy from Harvard to come back.
You spoke to Dr. Lorraine Gunzerath. What did she tell you about reaching out to the alcohol industry for funding?
She said they wouldn't have any control over the trial or over the conclusions or how it was done, but that she thought they would be happy if the results were good. And she said it was important to bring the investigators to meet them so that they would – she actually said if they didn't think the investigator team was viable, they wouldn't sign on.
Well, she also said to you, if I've got this right, we were supposed to be preventing alcoholism. That's what that agency is for. So to spend the kind of money we were looking for, $100 million, on research for a possible good use of alcohol was something that would never fly. But referring to the alcohol industry, she said, if we had a clinical trial and it was a positive result, which we thought it might be, you sort of think, you know where it's going, they'd be happy. Most scientists don't think, want to say what they think the result of a trial is going to be. That's why you have the trial. Who did she mean would be happy? The agency? The industry?
Well, I think she meant the alcohol industry would be happy that they had put up the money. Yeah. Everyone was going to be happy, even if it's just a so-so finding that's not negative, even if it's a neutral finding.
Talk about the science here. There are a lot of questions even about how this was set up. For instance, you write, the control group, one didn't drink at all. One was asked to drink one glass a day of something. But that's not human behavior.
Right. And we know that moderate drinking has for years been, we've been told, it's one serving a day for women, two for men. For this study, they made it one serving for everyone. Not exactly the way most people drink, one drink a day, no more ever, but every single day. Mm-hmm. So alcohol is associated with falls, with accidents, car accidents, all kinds of complications. Right. So this reduces the risk, if they're following this, that they'll have those kinds of problems.
Well, they also, you write, screened out people with any kind of problem that might be compromised by even light drinking. So a history of addiction, psychiatric, liver or kidney problems, certain cancers, a family history of breast cancer, which, as another researcher told you, means you're picking off the people who are most likely to have the harms.
A very select group of people who are already pretty healthy.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you may have set this up so that the risks are going to be very small, and yeah, then the benefit looks better. The benefit-to-risk ratio looks better for the benefit side.
Look, you spoke to George Koob, who's the current director of the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism. And he got very upset at the suggestion that a firewall had been breached.
Yes, he did. He raised his voice repeatedly during the interview with me and said that all of this happened before he came in. Not all of it happened before he came in, but he suggested that this was really not a problem and that the foundation was absolutely a firewall,
yeah,
even though there's a lot of cozy relationships there between the Alcohol Institute and the alcohol industry. There's,
yeah,
a lot of communication. There's a lot of back and forth.
Well, and by the way, no one's denying that these things happen. You even have emails. One was sent by Dr. Gunzerath, the woman we spoke of, headed urgent, response needed ASAP. And it was inviting the lead researcher to Philadelphia to talk to the annual meeting of the Worldwide Brewing Alliance to get the brewers' buy-in and extra overall funding potential as well. So it's right there.
And he says he's willing to be anywhere, anytime, I think. I don't have that right in front of me.
I could do any version or part or the whole day or night. So, look, raises so many questions about this particular research, which is very controversial to a lot of people who worry that if just the headline comes out from the NIH that light or moderate drinking is good for you, that that's a trigger for people for whom drinking is not a good idea. But the sad thing is that maybe there is some really good science here, and now that seems to have been obscured.
I want to point out something else about the whole risk versus benefit of alcohol as well. There's increasing concern about alcohol being associated with an increased incidence of cancer, and specific cancers in particular, such as breast cancer, cancers of the mouth and throat and of the esophagus, and some others. And this study won't follow people for long enough to see an increase in the incidence of cancers. Yeah. So you may get a message, it's good for your heart, but not know that it may be bad for cancer tumors.
Since you're reporting, do you think it might be stopped? I mean, what's been the response?
That's not my sense at all. The director of the NIH, Francis Collins, says he believes it's a good study and that there's merit to it. He is concerned about some of the reporting and the contact that was made with donors before the foundation got involved, and I think also with some of the questions about the design of the study, and he says he's going to have some of that reviewed, but I think it's ongoing. I think the bigger problem is really, how do you recruit participants who have to come in willing to be randomized to either drink one drink every day or no drinks ever for a long period of time. There are not many people who are going to want to do that and be able to stick with it. And I think that's probably a bigger challenge for this study.
Yeah. I want to be clear. Were the industry representatives also told by the researchers that no form of alcohol, wine, beer, or liquor, would be called better than any other? In other words, it doesn't matter if somebody has a scotch or a glass of wine. It's all going to be about whether or not a glass of alcohol a day is good for you?
Yes. I think that's why liquor and beer companies are the sponsors, because as many people are convinced already that a glass of wine and certainly a glass of red wine a day is good for them, we also don't know that that's a cause and effect either. We really don't have it that pinned down. But beer and liquor have never had that, enjoyed that health halo. And I think they want in on it.
Well, it's fascinating reporting, and we'll link you to it at hereandnow.org. Ronnie Karen Rabin from the New York Times, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And again, NIH Director Francis Collins says the goals of the research are worthy, but he will examine whether health officials violated federal policy. But meanwhile, could you do a drink a day or no drink a day for 10 years? Thoughts at hereandnow.org.